Welcome to the Last Round MMA.
The guy's never beaten me. In order to be the champion, you have to beat the champion.
A podcast for the MMA fan.
Imagine that. Look at everybody up here. They're all dressed like me. They're all trying to talk like me. They're all trying to be me.
Bringing you in-depth interviews and more from across the MMA world.
This is like pride. You know, everybody's here. I feel great. And, you know, I can't wait. Saturday night, I'm going to crush this guy hype.
Are you ready? Let's start the show.
Welcome to the Last Round MMA. And today we have a multidiscipline fighter from Long Island, New York, Eric Bloodaxe Olsen. Thanks for joining me, Eric.
Thank you. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Well, I appreciate you jumping on just after you literally fought this weekend. And I know it's kind of late in the UK. So let's jump straight into it. So did you grow up and how did you get started in combat sports?
Born in West Islip, New York. Grew up there till about six. I was wrestling in grade school, doing tournaments over there. Then moved from West Islip at six or seven to New Jersey, South Jersey, Barnegat, New Jersey. Was joined on the wrestling team pretty heavy there, doing tournaments and getting into fights. But I was a little kid, always getting in trouble. Heavy on the wrestling, like wrestling was everything we did back then. And then I moved from New Jersey, probably at about when you're going into sixth grade in America, back to Long Island, New York, but to my hometown, my father's hometown, which was Levittown, to where I lived up until I moved out when I was, you know, 16, 17, 18. I had wrestled for Division Avenue too, but by that point I was all burned out and sick of it. Having wrestled from 5 years old up until like 15. So I stopped and didn't really show any interest in grappling until I started doing submission jiu-jitsu with Matt and Nick Serra and Rodrigo Gracie in West Babylon, what used to be called The Barn before Matt got big and opened up his own gym. And I did that for a little bit. That was like the core fundamentals of any fighting with me. I did some boxing when I was younger, like getting stuff in a gym as like a kid, but everything was really heavy wrestling based tournaments. I had tons of tournaments as a little kid, a lot of first and second place trophies. But you know, when you're 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, you don't have like, if I could go back in time, I would have stuck with it and tried to get into college and done it and all that. But at the time, I just was like, it was just something you did. Like, cool, you win your trophies, you win your stuff, you hang out with your friends at the meets, you start trouble with the other school's wrestling team at the meets that you're wrestling against. But, like, it was never any, like, who the fuck thinks at 7 or 8 years old, oh, I'm going to go to college and going to get into fighting? Because MMA really wasn't around back then. Mm-hmm. I was born in 1982, 83, 84, 85, 86, 87. So 87, 88 is when I was wrestling. There was no MMA like 5 year old now would see or anything like that, you know.
How was growing up in like Long Island, New York area? Is it rough?
No, I mean, I'm from white class middle suburbia. My neighborhoods are upper white class, middle class, or medium middle class. There was no like hardship. You didn't hear gunshots at night. That's 15 minutes away, you can go to Roosevelt or Hempstead and see fucking crackheads dead on the street. But where I grew up, it was all white working class families. And back in those times, and then we were rich when we moved to New Jersey. Like we had a fucking mansion, like out of Desperate Housewives. When my dad, because my dad worked for NBC News my whole life as the nightly news lead artist. There was no trouble in the sense of other than like the average trouble that kids get into. And I like to fight a lot. So I would fight with everybody over everything. They'd get their older brothers. I'd get a weapon, that type of stuff. As far as that, there's no like stories of like, you know, seeing gang shootouts or mafia running numbers outside my house. I had a nice, I could send you pictures. I mean, that doesn't mean that my upbringing was nice, but it means that I lived in a nice area. But, you know, it is what every area has its events where, you know, if you're going to get into fist fights with people and it's going to escalate and I'll escalate things, that's what happens. But I was very big into wrestling growing up, like So for me, if you wanted to calm me down from doing something, just threaten that I couldn't go to a wrestling meet on the weekend, and then it would make me like study and stuff like that. But I hated school. I still don't fucking like it. And I got kicked out of everything in the end, and I never graduated. And I got kicked out of the GED program in jail and kicked out of the GED program in prison. So I never went to college or anything like that. Never really got past an 11th grade level because I was finally kicked out of Division Avenue High School in the Nassau County School District total when I was in 12th grade, finally, after them fucking bouncing me around to and fro. So, yeah.
So what age did you walk into the boxing gym for the first time?
Boxing was maybe 8 or 9. So I was heavy into wrestling. I had already been wrestling like endlessly, and I was getting bored of it. And I saw a thing of people punching each other. You know, I don't really care who it offends. Boxing does not win street fights. It's not a fight. It's not fighting. It's a sport. It's a part of fighting, but it isn't fighting. A good wrestler murders a good boxer 9 out of 10 times. But I was bored of wrestling. So I seen people punching each other in the mouth. And I was like, oh, I want to try that. So they let me try that. And then I did it for a little bit. And they took me out of it when I started using it on people at school. But I mean, I was hitting everybody anyway. I would just wrestle you down and bash your face in. But now that I could do it with my hands and then I could wrestle you down, that was becoming a problem.
And you were, I saw in a previous interview, you said you were actually like locked up in a children's center around age 11?
Yeah, 11 and 12 and 12 and 13 in Sagamore Children's Center and South Oaks Children's Center. So in Long Island, New York, you have something called DFY, Department for Youth, which is basically prison for children. Underneath DFY are your residential and your state-run psychiatric facilities. The only difference being with children and teens, a psychiatric facility, they will process you into the DFY because they're not going to put an 11-year-old in jail. They're going to put you in a psych center, which is all basically criminal kids, and then they're going to ship you off to where they deem you have to go based on what you did to get in there. So I missed. They were going to send me to Tryon. I would have rather went there. They kept me in South Oaks for about 6 to 8 months, They kept me in Sagamore, which was fucking horrible. And then I was in South Oaks. I was in South Oaks before I was in Sagamore for about 2 to 3 months, young. But, you know, had I known what I know now, I didn't know anything. I just, it's one place to the next. Obviously, the reputation of Tryon and DFY is worse. But looking back on what I've known from people who have been in them, it was no different than where I was. No one hears you scream at 3 in the morning when you're getting beat to death by a bunch of fucking grown men when you're 11. Nobody hears if you're up in the mountains or you're in Amityville or you're in Dix Hills and in a private Sagamore facility center. It's all the same type of fucking torture that puts you through if you don't listen to what they say. Yeah, that was when I was young. That kind of started out my mindset on, well, what the fuck can you do to me? I'm here. So if this is the worst you can do to me, and it's terrible, but you know, like anything else in life, think of your worst situation and go through it. And if it doesn't kill you physically, like I'm not talking some metaphorical motivational bullshit. I mean, if you do not physically die from it, at some point you will become accustomed and used to it. Now, if that's the worst, everything is better. So what could you do to me? I've already been through the trenches. I mean, they fucked me up in there on the medicine. They drugged me heavily for months of my life on antipsychotic medications. When I say fucked me up, I mean drugged me to death. They were putting me on 3 doses of Haldol, 25 milligrams, 3 times a day, Zyprexa, Tegretol, Neurontin, Depakote, Lithium, Prozac. Every antipsychotic and mood stabilizer you can think of, pumping me so fucking full of them that I lost my vision. It made me fucking start going into muscle spasms. It was very rough. And that was without the violence on kid versus kid because it was 11 to 18. So, you know, you're in a dorm with fucking convicted kids that are murderers going to prison when they graduate that and you're 11 years old. So, that was that with all those situations. But that was like the fundamental core of what the fuck could you do to me? As I got older, like, well, I was already there. What could you do to me? Because jail ain't half as bad as those places, especially when you're older. I've been in Nassau County. I've been in Riverhead. I've been in Nassau Trade Youth Academy. down in Tennessee. I've been in downstate. I've been in Fishkill. I like prison. I like jail. It was fun when I was in my fucking early 20s and late teens. Nothing compared to the places when I was fucking locked up. And our jails and our prisons are much worse than your stuff in England. Like, your prisons and jails in England are a fucking daycare center from what I see. I mean, we're living archaic in those places. And those places are violent, too. And I'm a very violent person and involved in a lot of violence. So it's just constant. It just feeds off itself. They put you in it to punish you. And in turn, you become like a bigger, stronger monster. You get out and you punish them, being society. And then they put you back in. And it's a revolving door until you die. Or until they kill you, or you kill them and they kill you. Because if you kill them, they kill you, right? They put you in prison forever and they gun you down on the street. Or you just kill yourself after you kill them in the middle of the street, so you don't got to go to prison for 800 fucking years and make them money.
Was there one incident that led to you at that age getting locked up, or was it just a prolonged, you know, bad behavior, shall we say?
I lived in a house where it was strict, and my parents were the best they could be, but my mother was barbaric. Growing up with my mom, and I love my mother very much, I came from one of those households that if you talked back, you're from, I don't know, how old are you?
37.
Okay, so I'm 40. So I don't know if you had any Irish Catholic friends growing up. Maybe you would know that, like, what their families were like. If they talked back, the beatdowns they would get. Well, that was what my mom was like Saddam Hussein. Very strict. I mean, it was prison there. OCD type, clean. Get up on a Saturday at 7, clean what you cleaned yesterday. Even slightly mouth off, get the fuck beat out of you with a belt and fucking spoon. Get the fuck out of the house. Come back at lunch. Eat your lunch. If you're 1 minute late, get your ass beat. Get the fuck out of the house. While you're out of the house playing, you're fighting. And then you come back, and now everything you've done throughout the day, the other kids' parents are going to call home. You know, Eric beat up my son. Eric broke my son's toys. Now I'm going to get my fucking head beat in again and all my shit taken from me and put in my room alone. No dinner. So, you know, it was an accumulative thing. As soon as I could walk, I started getting fucked up and just clashing. Well, me and my family not getting along, my mother primarily, who, again, I'm not saying anything negative about her. I'm happy she was the way she was because she made me the way I am. And without her, I probably would be a pussy. And two, I was not an easy kid to have. So I'm not insulting her. She was just very old school, heavy handed. And that was it. What led to me getting locked up at first was just an accumulative buildup. I would get in trouble at school, so they would call home, so I would get destroyed at home. So I would take it, and I would go to school and take it out on everybody, and they would call home, and then I would, it was just a revolving cycle. When I was a very young kid, like 5, I started to think, if I'm stuck in my room on a Saturday, I'm not allowed to eat, I've just got my head kicked in, all my toys broken and taken, and I got to sit in here all day. Well, then anybody outside of here is to blame. Nobody's helping me, so fuck everybody. So if I get out this room tomorrow, any boy or girl I see is a target. Fuck them. Get them. Rob them, beat them up, take their shit. Do what you want to do to them. If they can't stop you, that's your right then. And that was a viewpoint that I lived most majority of my life by and still do to an extent, especially with fighting in the rings and cages and all this shit. But yeah, just an accumulative thing, constant conflict with teachers. And, you know, I asked a girl out once in 6th grade, and she, you know, I was new to a school, and she, I guess her and her friends thought it would be funny to make me think that she liked me. So she followed me around for a while. And when I asked her out after study hall in 6th grade, she laughed at me along with the class. So I said, oh, all right. And I went and I bought a replica 9mm BB gun at the bus station, and from a kid who was selling it. And I came into school the next day and I was like, yo, bitch, I'm gonna blow your fucking head off. And I love it to this day. The horror and terror of her dropping to the floor when I pulled the gun out on her. I mean, it wasn't a real gun, I'd have shot her if it was, but she was white, but she turned bone white. Her girlfriends, I mean, if you've ever seen somebody about to die, they drop, or they freeze, or they attack, or they run. She froze and dropped, and it was just so fucking funny. and the classroom cleared out and the fucking SWAT team came up and the police came up and I rumbled with one of the fucking teachers and I lost because he was a grown man. You know, that wrestling was pretty helpful though when I was trying to single leg him down. Tried to make them all think the gun was real. Lucky that it's not. They probably would have shot me if they had gotten in, but they didn't. The teacher disarmed it. But, you know, shit like that led to it. Girl mouthing off to me on the bus, smack her in the teeth. A boy mouthing off to me on the bus, kick him in the bridge of his nose. Not normal type of kid violence, like real violence. Like eye gouging a kid in the back of the fucking bus type shit, biting him in the face. Getting caught murdering and killing a ton of insects in my backyard when I was little. Like impale a whole thorn bush of fucking bugs I found, stick them on it, burn them up, torture shit. Just the way it goes. Sooner than later, you're going to do it to a person, somebody you know, somebody you don't know. Right place at the right time for you, wrong place at the wrong time for them. You know, and then you get locked up in those places, and those places, give me your shoes. No. Okay. So you go heat up a cup of soup and melt someone's face with it. Go take a knife or a fucking box cutter or the thing on the side of the wall with the circuits, cut them across their face with it. For nothing. Look at me too long, I'm going to cut you. Don't even look at me. I just want to cut somebody today. I just don't like life today, so I want to hurt you. That type of mentality, what you're around all day, what you've already coming from, just builds into your head, becomes super fucking strong, mentally, physically, emotionally gone. Get out, and now I'm back in high school in ninth grade with kids who want to mouth off to me. You want to die today, motherfucker? Because I'll kill you, type of fucking shit. So, and that was just repetitive. They tried to break me with the system, and maybe they did. I don't know. Maybe they didn't. And I just kept doing what I did until it led to prison as an adult.
Eric, were you always a big kid? You fight at what, cruiserweight, heavyweight?
I don't know. I'm not a big person. I'm only 6 foot, 73 inch reach. I just eat a lot. I got pretty strong, like, musculature in my legs, big legs, huge legs. Always been able to lift a lot, pretty strong. I was always more athletic than big, like wrestling. I would always go for explosive type of like doubles and singles into body locks and arm drags. But I also have always had just the mentality to me that if you beat me, I'm going to get you. So if you're winning, I want to go more. Like in the fight that I had on the weekend, he clipped me really good here. I like it. You know, I got footage of it. Fucking smiled back and blasted his head off, almost knocked him out. I'm not one of the, you have certain types of people who get hurt in a fight and they want to stop. Then you have people who get hurt in a fight and they want to tactically defend it. And then you get people who hurt in a fight and they just want to go at you. Mine was the last of the three. So, just like a will, like I'll die before I stop. You got to fucking knock me out or kill me before I stop. And that's with anything. Even when I used to fucking be like a psychotic person that would stalk people and rob them and tie them up and shit. I'm doing it because it's fun, not because I need your money. To kill me, to stop me. Shouldn't have posted that shit on Instagram type thing. But yeah, I was never big. I mean, I don't think I'm a big, but if anything, I'm fat at this day and age. But I, you know, in my 20s and 30s, I was like, 80 kilograms, 84 kilograms, just in shape. But, you know, pretty strong, I think. I got a decent punch on me. I mean, when you're fighting professionals, it's a little different. You're hitting somebody in the street with a big mouth, one punch, and the person's having a seizure on the floor, and then wasn't even a full fucking punch. So I've always been blessed with, like, the one-hitter-quitter type thing, just not in the ring. In the ring, I've got to land a few to make it count.
You kind of touched on, you know, you went to jail. If I'm right, I think you spent 6 years in total in jail for arson, weapons.
Three straight,
or six total.
Yeah.
For arson, weapons, possession, and terrorist threats.
So the charge that sent me away was the arson. Like, burned something down for somebody. And they were wearing a wire on me. And they got me set up. And when I got arrested by the SWAT team and the BSO, the Bureau of Special Operations, took me down in the middle of the street. I had a weapon on me. I had an expanded, it wasn't even one of my normal weapons either. I had an expandable baton. That's not a real weapon, in my opinion. I've got machine guns, sort of shotguns, handguns with fucking hollow tip bullets. An expandable baton is something that you just fucking hit a kid across his fucking hands with, just for when you're robbing them, because it's funny to watch them freak out. But that's not a real weapon, but it's a felony nonetheless. So arson, blew up a bunch of fucking cars in the driveway, like 5 a.m. with like a ton of gasoline. Did that for as a favor for somebody. He used to make decent money doing stuff like that. What was it? Just be bored too. You got a problem with somebody? We're cool. Let's go to their house and set it on fire at 3 a.m. You know, so just what it was. And he's told on me, and I went to prison for 1 1/3 to 4. And on that, I did 3. And then I got out and finished the rest on parole. And that's when I kind of, the 22 to 25, that's when I started getting heavily into like training again when I got out, like kickboxing and boxing, kickboxing mainly. And nothing else to fucking do. I wasn't going to go back to hanging out with people who didn't write me letters when I was locked up, because I would have just ended up fucking torturing them to death or something, because I had a lot of resentment in me for that.
I saw that there's an interview with you on YouTube for Prison X, where you talk about your time in prison. Can you just touch on you're obviously a white guy and you're in a predominantly black and Spanish jail?
Yeah, so in America, in the East Coast, I'm from the East Coast, New York. I can't talk about jails down south. I can't talk about jails in the Midwest. I cannot talk about jails on the West Coast. I can talk about jails and prisons in the East Coast. And you are a minority in there if you are white. It's about 97 or 8% black and Hispanic. Hispanic being Mexican, Dominican, Puerto Rican, whatever they want to classify themselves that, they are not Caucasian on the fucking registry of the prison. There's no gangs in New York. There's no Aryan Nation. There's no Aryan Brotherhood. No Nazi lowriders. That stuff is all out in the Midwest and down south. That is not near me. You get a few white guys that are cool, but most white guys are in there for like being fucking dope addicts who got high on heroin and tried to rob a bank. And all they care about is getting high, or child molesters and rapists. I'm neither of those. So yeah, it was pretty fucking violent and fun. But you know, like in New York, it's a little different than other places from what I've been told. Like California, black guys, and you won't hang out. Where I was, that still won't happen, but there's a few that are all right. And you could sit down and play chess, hang out with them. They could become your friends. Again, are they ganged up? Are they in like Bloods or any of that? Because usually it won't happen then. But if they're not, yeah, you could be cool with them. No one's going to judge you on it. But yeah, it was basically a continuation of the shit that I went through when I was little, because it's the same factor. You see the same people in the motherfucker.
What's like, is it just 24-hour bang up? What's the routine in there?
Nah, I was in a medium A. So it goes max A, max B, medium A, medium B, minimum A, minimum B. Minimums being like fucking somewhere they would put like the queen or the king if they got locked up, like with a fucking tennis court in it. I was in a place that was 78% lifers. You're in dorms, 60 people, bunk beds and rooms off to the side, like 3, 4, 5 people to a room, stoves, and then that's it. But I've also been in places that are run like a max A, where you lock out from 8 till 11, then you lock in from 11 till 1, then you lock out from 1 to 5, then you lock in from 5 to 10, then you lock out from 5 till 10. And then that you're behind bars and you don't see sunlight. But in prison where I was, it was like a college dorm filled with murderers and convicted fucking like bank robbers. And a lot of those guys had been in there since the 80s. So it was like a no joke environment. Like you could have a fist fight with somebody, absolutely. But if you mouthed off or did something wrong, you're going to get cut up. You're going to get impaled. They're going to take out fucking swords. I'm talking swords, like 3-foot fucking swords from the metal shop, and they're going to chop your head off. It's not a joke there. Like, depending who you fight with or what you say, you could have a one-on-one all day with somebody, or you could mouth off to the wrong person who just chops your fucking head off while you're watching TV in the TV room. But that's the name of the game. So it's definitely not an environment that people here in the UK are used to. You know, I always say a lot in the UK from what I've seen that there's no consequences here. People really don't go to prison here. the prison here that I've seen isn't really prison. The jail time really isn't jail time. I got 3 years for blowing up someone's cars. I've seen people here do horrific shit and terrible things and get 15 months, which they do half, and then they got to do a fucking program. Not New York. Oh, and then the COs, the correctional staff, they'll torture you to death. They'll murder you in a heartbeat, and they'll write your family and say you got shipped. They were killing people left and right when I was there. You see somebody one day, you never see him again. Beat to death, murdered up in his fucking cell, in the box. They hung him. They broke his neck in half. Getting out in a week, 23, dead as a doornail. Never getting out because he mouthed off to somebody. They said, oh, yeah, cuff up. Cuff up, never see him again. Dead. And they'll just plant stuff on you. And then they'll laugh about it. They'll talk about it up at the bubble. How you screamed as you died, what your bones sounded like when they broke, what your face looked like if you shit yourself. You hear it all day long. What are you going to do? Who are you going to tell? Internal affairs? They're friends with them. If you don't have money and an outside lawyer, and even if you do, beware. But if you don't have real good money and an outside lawyer, shut the fuck up and look away. Unless you're going to fucking do something. But if you do something, you're next. They will handcuff you and torture you to death. For nothing. Because it's fun. That is, you know, when I did the Prison X, I did like an hour and a half interview just ripping the cops. Because I hate police, hate them across the board. I hate correction officers. I hate police. I hate sheriffs. I hate fucking hall monitors in high school. I do not like pretend people, authority figures. No one's going to tell me what the fuck I'm going to do. I'm going to do anything I want to do. And if you get in my way and you try to stop me, then I'm going to try to kill you. And if you die, that's your fault. And if I die, that's your fault. This is the way I think. But yeah, the prisons were very violent, very bad. But again, the staff was the worst ones you have to watch out for. Because me and the inmates can handle something all day. You know, if me and you don't like each other and you've got five friends and I got five friends, they'll hash it out that we just fight. Or maybe we go into the bathroom and we fight with knives like we're gladiators. That constantly happened over there. But it's the COs are the ones that you really have to beware. Because they will fucking destroy your existence. They will unmake you. You will never be seen again. In the Department of Corrections, you will be like you never existed. Your family will take years to find where you are because they'll just keep moving your name around from prison to prison.
Did you have any instances with the COs then? Due to you kind of touched on how you don't like authority, so I'm sure people listening to this are going to...
Yeah, they fucked me up. They jumped me. They beat me up pretty bad. They tortured me. They fucking locked. They jumped me, fucked me all up. Cuffed me up, beat me, stomped me, put me in a cell when it was 17 degrees below zero and just a t-shirt and shorts and left me in there all night. Froze my, feel like my fingers are going to fall off. What was it? Constantly. Wake you up at 5 a.m, handcuff you to your feet, beat you up, put you outside in the snow, let you sit there for 45 minutes. Better hope they let you in. You start to go numb after fucking 10. Not feed you, not bring you your food, shut your water off on you. Always. Me and them always clashed. I'm white, they're white, but they think I'm garbage because I'm not a cop. And I think you're garbage because you're a cop. You know? Fuck you guys. I don't like you motherfuckers. I got into drama with the inmates, but I hate police all day fucking long. To this day, even though I'm not involved in anything anymore, I still don't like cops. The cops here are different in England, and I still don't like them trying to say hello to me or good afternoon to me. I don't want to talk to you. I don't talk to police.
How was your first date? How was your first night in jail? Did you have people try you? Did they try and take your stuff and see if they could punk you?
No, I mean, jail or prison. My first time in actual jail? No. I'm trying to think, like, because no one's ever tried any of that. You know what it is this the deal with prison and jail? And when you're dealing with inmates and predatory people, they're going to go after who's weak. They're going to go after who won't put up a fight. So if there's 50 of you, you can beat me. But if there's 50 of you, one of you will possibly get injured. So why would you go at the guy who's willing to fight you versus the guy who came in behind him, who's terrified and crying, that type of thing? I had tons of fights. I had tons of people at points try me. Yo, let me get this. Let you get what? You're taking shit from me. What do you mean let you get? Do you want to make a deal where I give you a bag of potato chips and then you give me two bags of potato chips back? You don't? Well, that's the only thing we're doing here. Let you get? That sounds like you're trying to extort me. So now we got to fight. So that type of shit a few times, but that vanishes after you bash someone's fucking teeth out the back of their head. But other inmates, unlike me, white guys who were not prepared for that environment, yeah, they would take their shit all day long. Never happened to me, never will. You'll have to kill me over a fucking 25 cent thing of toothpaste because I'm never going to let anyone run around saying they got one over on me. Mm. All that wrestling paid off. A lot of black guys can't wrestle.
So after you got released, you touched on that's when you kind of got back into training, a bit of kickboxing, a bit of boxing.
I got out in 2007. And when I was 25 and I became a super criminal, I took out all my revenge on society. I have done things I can't talk about. I've done things I can talk about that they can't prove. And I just was on a fucking warpath. And I was doing kickboxing too, but my life was sustained by crime. You see, when I was locked up, I made contacts with people and I kept them. And I also looked at what got people arrested. I'm not stupid. I looked at what got people arrested, how they all got arrested, what they did wrong, what they did right, what their co-defendants did. And, you know, you pick pieces and put them together. And I was heavily involved in all that shit for a long time. And when I say this, I'm not acting like some asshole who watched the movie Power or that too stupid TV show Power. Not at all. You wouldn't have even known that I had any money. I spent it all on fucking food and stupid shit. Gave it to my parents every now and then. But like little things, like if I had 500 Oxycontins, because I was involved in heavily selling Oxycontin, which is like synthetic heroin, if I had 500 Oxycontins and I'm going to give it to Mike, now Mike is going to make $8,000 on these pills. I'm going to let him keep 3. He has to give me back 5. But I'm going to put it on the side of 7-Eleven in a big gulp cup wrapped in 500 pills. And I'm going to sit across and I'm going to look at 3 in the morning. No one's going to come by there and pick that up except him. If someone comes by and picks it up, well, then I just lost my pills because it's probably an undercover cop. But I'm not going to hand it to him because as much as I know Mike, I don't know if he got arrested last week and he's wearing a wire for the BSO, Bureau of Special Operations, and they're trying to get him. So little shit like that. And then you watch him do it. He doesn't know you're watching him. Does he go talk to anybody? No, he's probably going to take his lines and do them because he's addicted to Oxy. And then he's going to sell, and then in a week or two, whatever, you get your money back. That type of shit. Like, also, I wouldn't start drama with people for like no reason. Like, I would rob people that were drug dealers, but that was just more for fun. But like, if you were selling your shit in this area, I don't got to do that. Everyone's already knows about you. You're a drug dealer there. They're coming for you. They're going to get you. I don't know you. I'm going to go over there where nobody knows me. And I'm just going to undercut everybody. When I'm done, I'm going to leave like a sneak. I'm not fucking trying to get Bureau Special Operation kicking in my door with machine guns at 4 in the fucking morning. The Oxycontin murdered tons of people in Long Island. And it killed the rich, upper middle class white people. It wasn't crack and it wasn't heroin in the Spanish and black areas. So it was, you can look it up, the opioid epidemic, pandemic. In New York and Long Island in like 2010-ish in the 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and those areas, they had to literally unmake the pill, Oxycontin. They had to change the molecular structure so you can't crush it and sniff it and it time released into you. And the thing was that all those middle rich white kids that got hooked on it, when they fucked their lives off, when they came down, then they were going into the black areas to get bundles of heroin. So it had a fucking seesaw effect back and forth, like the black in the Hispanic areas that would normally never be frequented by these people started getting frequented by them. And then they're taking them, robbing them. And then the police are rushing in. And then the white middle class areas and the upper ones, but you lock me in a fucking cell for 3 years. Nobody writes me any letters and you torture me enough. You think I care about society? Fuck you. What's that?
So how did you go from that to deciding to be, you know, a full-time fighter?
I did it while I was fighting. My whole fight career, basically, up until the past 2019, when I stopped, was funded by crime. That's why I'm so poor now. Fucking work, regular work, fight, and I have no fucking extra cash. So I did it while I was fighting. My first trip to England was sponsored by me fucking getting fucking pounds of weed sent in the mail. And in America, back in 2016, you will get federal prison time for that. prove I did it. For everyone watching this, oh, he's bragging. Prove I did it. Prove I'm not just lying. You can't. But what was it? I would get like 5 or 10 pounds sent to me and signed for him. And that's suicide. If the back of that UPS truck is a SWAT team, you're done. Mm. But then I take them, I get my cut, and then I save the money. Bang. Now I fly to England on my own money. I got spending money in England. I'm fighting. I'm getting my money back. Blah, blah. And yeah, that was just the way it went. I worked some jobs too. I did. But you can only do that so much while you're fighting and training. And then plus, one of the reasons you sell drugs or do crime is so you don't have to wake up early in the morning, right? And then one of the guys I was selling drugs with loved to fucking get up early in the morning and do it. He'd be like, we need to leave at 5 a.m. to get this stuff up to Boston. Why the fuck do I have to get up that? This is literally, I got into this profession so I don't have to get up at 5 a.m. to go to work. I do not want to be driving to Boston at 6 a.m. with a fucking 18 pounds or 20 pounds of weed. Why can't I do it at night? I mean, he explained why and it made sense, but just ridiculousness.
Well, I'm assuming the traffic. Is that why? Is that why it's easier in the morning?
Well, the theory would be if you're doing something in the morning, rush hour, 7, 8, 9 in the morning, everyone's going to work. That's a normal person driving in a normal car. If I'm driving at 8, 9 at night, all of a sudden you're normal, but make you just stick out a little more for the police, especially with your head tattoos and a mohawk at the time. So it's only fucking weed, but at the time, weed was not legal. That particular situation you're talking about, fucking 80 pounds of weed, 100 pounds of weed, duffel bags of weed, 3,000, 4,000 a pound, 4,500. You got to take it. You got to get the money. But if you get caught in America at that point, going over state lines, your life is over. You are going to federal prison for 20 plus fucking years. I don't know if you would anymore, but you still wouldn't play around with it. Feds are crazy. New York is fucking stupid with their laws.
So you get out of jail and you decide to become a professional fighter. Was that something that you decided? Did your coach decide it? What made you choose that path?
I was bored. Started fighting amateur, doing a lot of amateur fights. Fight like 4 or 5 times a month, kickboxing, K1, Muay Thai, boxing, like unlicensed, stupid boxing, not real boxing, not ABA or Golden Glove boxing. And then I was doing that and I was starting to get a decent name because I was disrupting shit constantly. And getting into fights at the venues and throwing judges around and flipping tables and slapping refs and shit. And then I was like, you know, I want to go pro. I want to go pro at 30. And my coach was like, no. And I was like, well, then I'm going to leave. And I left and I went pro on my own and was just fighting Friday night fights, Muay Thai and around. And then I saw something on TV about UB Bad, BKB trademark. Doing bare knuckle fights in England. I was eating like a bunch of Chinese food watching it. And I was like, well, that looks fucking easy. I've been doing that shit forever. How many fucking fist fights have I had with fucking people? I could go out to a nice fucking dinner at a sushi restaurant. I'll end up in a fist fight with 2 or 3 people. So I was like, oh, cool. I wrote Jim Freeman Dove an email. And he was like, well, our last American, we paid and bought his ticket. He no-showed us. So if you buy your own ticket, we'll pay you back when you get here. I said, all right. So I paid my own ticket, flew over there, got to Heathrow. My ride never picked me up. He came in a taxi. Some kid that I met online, some guy that was a fighter. We took a train. We took buses back from Heathrow to Bournemouth, Boscombe. And I paid him £250. What I know now, I got ripped off to stay in his fucking attic in a room upstairs for 3 weeks. And I just walked around Boscombe and then I fought in Coventry. And that was the start of everything. With bare knuckle and fighting in England. And at the time, the pound was worth much more than the dollar. Mm. So I was getting like £1,000, £1,500, which was close to like $3,500 at the time. Like 200 pounds would be close to $500. So I would come home, £1,500, and that's like good money, like just for nothing for a fucking bare knuckle fight. Ooh, wow. But then it started to progress and become more of an entity than it was in 2016. I'm actually the longest fighting American fighter. I'm in America in bare knuckle that's never fought in America. I've only fought it in England because that's where the company I fight for is based out. That's why I just fought for the first American company in London this past Sunday. And I got disqualified for eye gouging my opponent. I didn't, in my opinion, but the ref said I did. Inside the clinch, they said I was poking him in his eyes. I don't think I did. I think I pushed the knuckle and pushed his head up and like rabbit punched him, but whatever. It's not a loss. DQ ain't a loss. And then the fight before that, I fought the same guy and I headbutted him because he pissed me off three times. Got DQ'd there too. Still not a loss, in my opinion. So, yeah, that's that. But then from there, it branched off into King of the Street stuff and sweet it, to where I go over in Scandinavia and Europe.
Yeah, let's just touch on that, the King of the Streets. So how did you reach out to them? Did they reach out to you? How did that come about? Because that's a big promotion. If you look at the YouTube, they get thousands upon thousands, millions.
Yeah. So I was pretty deep in my bare knuckle career fighting over here in England. And I had been all over Europe. Wator reached out to me in Poland. And I got killed when I went to Poland. I fought this Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt who ripped me apart. Then I fought this kickboxer and knocked me out in 30 seconds. Poland's a tough place to fight in. Wator reached out to me for a Vale Tudo tournament. Vale Tudo, for those who don't know, is like the original UFC. Headbutts, no gloves, no time limits, just fight. Rules, though. You can't eye gouge. You can't bite. You can't kick low. You're on pads. In the process of all this, I saw on Instagram, King of the Streets, hooligans fighting on the cement. No rules. You can bite. You can eye gouge, stomp, headbutt, kick in the balls. No Americans. So I wrote them an email and I sent them my resume of destruction of all these fights I've had over in England, bare knuckle. I fought in Poland. I got killed, but I didn't do bad in the first minute against the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu guy until he got me down. And then they were like, we talked for about a year and nothing worked out because COVID kind of came around. Flights were getting canceled. They were saying they had a fight, but they couldn't tell me when because they didn't know. But I had a BKB fight for, you know, £3,000, and I can't cancel that to go fight on cement when I don't know what I'm getting paid. And you don't even know when it is. So we just kept in contact. And then one day I reached out and said, so what's up with the fight? And I was in bed eating a bunch of pizza, watching Black Mass. And they were like, oh, we got to fight this weekend. It's Tuesday. We fight Saturday. I said, yeah, versus who? They go, versus our undefeated heavyweight, French Viking. He's like 115 kilograms at like 190 centimeters. I said, yeah, cool, I'll take it. And they said, the only rule is no submissions. I said, all right, no problem. Because I can submission grapple decently. Not on no UFC level, but... And so I flew over there on like 3 days' notice, fat as fuck, fought, and I almost beat him. Ragdolled him around with my wrestling, kickboxed his head off. But in the end, I got tired, and they stood us up when I had a nice submission, but no submissions. I'll send you the fight, actually. And he finished it, but it was like a 9-8 minute fight for two guys at that weight and size. I mean, there's a picture of us both on the cement after, basically just dead, covered in blood, both of us fucked up. And even though I lost, I took that fight when no one else would take it on like 3 days, literally notice. So then they gave me another one. And that was the one that I won with that Polish Stomel hooligan guy by gouging his eyes. And then I fought Leo in August and I was beating his fucking ass all over the place. And I kicked him so hard and he checked and I kicked and he checked and I kicked and he checked and my leg broke. And then he kicked me in my broken fucking leg and I fell down. And I grabbed him up and I out-grappled him and I got up and I kept fighting for another 2 minutes, 3 minutes. He kicked my broken leg again. I dropped, I kicked his leg. It fucked and I didn't know it was broken. And my leg is still broken now. It was still broken when I fought on Sunday.
But the second fight with the eye gouging, that kind of like took off. I saw that, I think it was the Daily Mirror in the UK or the Daily Star did an article on you for that. Going into that fight, you travel alone everywhere you go, correct?
Yeah, everywhere. Yeah, I don't go with anybody.
So how is that for you? Because like you touched on, a lot of those guys that fight in King of the Streets, they're kind of hooligans. And that guy had a whole team of people with him.
He came out with two guys. It doesn't affect me. When I went into prison, I was alone when I went in there when I was young. When I went into fucking the youth places, I was alone. When I used to get my ass fucking beaten down with belts and spoons at 5, I was alone. I don't need anybody. When I sat outside somebody's house and waited for them to come home, to catch them in their yard, walking from their car, I'm alone. When I've been in your bedroom burglarizing it, I'm alone. when I blow your shit up at night, I'm alone. Why the fuck do I need somebody to go with me? I don't really like the company. I like to be by myself. I don't need you fucking interrupting me. I don't want to hear you snoring in the bed next to me. I like to be alone. So, yeah, I flew over there. Flew over there alone each time and fought. I'm really cool with the King of the Streets guys now. Mm. Like, the owners, like, they're my people. Like, we're really cool with each other. But I came alone, and they were looking at me kind of like, who the fuck is this? Everyone's got their little hooligan crew. I'm not a hooligan. There's no soccer fights in America. You know, we don't do that. If you get into a fight at a fucking Eagles and Giants game, you go to jail for like 10 years. You will go to jail. What was it? So, you know, I don't even call it football. It's soccer to me. What was it? The second fight, the guy gouge one. Yeah, like, I don't know. He couldn't wrestle. A lot of them hooligans are really tough and strong, but other parts of them, you know, it's like anything else. You have like your core group who are real, and then you've got others who want to be real, and they might be, but they just lack. He'd never wrestled a day in his life because a lot of those guys seem to think that striking is God. I grew up wrestling. He threw a punch. I kneed him in his balls. I missed. He clipped my head. I fell down, and he started trying to pound the base of my skull in. And I just waited for his leg to get closer, and I grabbed that. I ankle picked him, single legged him, got him down. He was going to fulcrum choke him, neck crank him, and break his jaw, but that wasn't allowed. No submissions. So I just got north-south and belly-to-belly and rode him and got him tired and terrorized him. Well, I mean, when you're stuck under me on the cement. And then I saw my opportunity to headbutt him, bang, headbutted him, and then just grabbed his fucking eye sockets and pushed my thumbs all the way down through his eyeballs into the base of his skull. Eyeballs are a weird thing. They squish out of the way, but they don't really break. And he could see fine. I don't know how. I mean, I grabbed his eye sockets to the side. A lot of people are mad at that because some of these Slavic Stomel guys, they're Polish, so they're supposed to be strong. And they are. And I'm American, so I'm supposed to be weak. And I won. And I won by fucking vicious brutality. You know, too many people think where you're from dictates how you are. I don't fucking get it. I was an ice cream man, too, at one point. And I went to cosmetology school, too. I worked in salons doing hair and makeup. I guess they didn't want to know that. I'm fucking on top of them, shoving my thumbs to his fucking eyeballs. But, you know, and then people were like, oh, no honor, no honor. What is that? I grew up in New York, fucking Department of Corrections. There's no honor. Whoever has the knife pulls it fastest. And you don't even fist fight. You stab people. You cut people. In England, everyone says knives are for cowards. Not where I'm from. What do I want to fist fight you for? My hands might hurt. I'll just cut you. Impale you like Vlad the Impaler. I'll watch you scream while your soul leaves your body. That's exciting. Who the fuck wants to beat on you if I don't like you? But what do I get out of fist fighting with you? Might as well just fucking shoot you or stab you. Make it permanent. Let's take it all the way. So, like, you know, they have this thing, a lot of these guys, honor, honor, fuck you. If we're fighting with each other, and this is why I won't fight with people on the fight, if I'm cool with you, I don't want to take it there. But once I go there, I'm on like a leather face intent. I'm trying to kill you by any means necessary. I'm not being carried off. You are in pieces if I have to. I'm not being that guy. That's going to be the YouTube highlight of getting his head stomped in. I'm going to murder you, and then I'm going to dismember your body if I can put it in somewhere to get it hidden. This is what it is. Don't take it there with me, then. Don't mouth off. Don't start with me. Don't fucking piss me off, and we won't take it to a place where it shouldn't be. That's it. Fought in Thailand, too.
What's your favorite promotion that you've fought in so far?
I love King of the Streets. I have to say King of the Streets, but you know, that's difficult because BKB treats me great. BYB that I just fought on, that was really great too. I'm going to say King of the Streets, BKB, BYB, those are the top ones. But you know, you got some little guys too, and I don't mean it in a way to be insulting, back in New York, like Joe Puglio's Top Kick Super Fights. Those cards were always really good for up-and-coming kickboxers and pros. They were really good. You know, Joe was a cool guy. Yeah, I liked his promotions, so I don't want to just totally overshadow that. Yeah. Depends what I'm in the mood to do. Do I want to wrestle your face off the cement and poke you in the eyes? Or do I just want to bare knuckle box you? Or do I want to kickbox you? Friday Night Fights was good. Justin Blair was cool. I didn't like much of his staff. And I don't like a lot of the Thai people and like the Thai gyms and the stupid nonsense they come up with in New York. But Friday Night Fights is like the biggest on the East Coast. It's who Glory pulled all their prospects from. I fought two guys who went to Glory. So, yeah.
Eric, when you go to some of these, you know, faraway places, you know, King of the Streets, Thailand, you kind of go as the away fighter. Do they ever try anything, you know, stick you in like a crappy hotel, give you like a taxi ride that's like 2 hours long?
No, no. So King of the Streets treats everyone amazing. King of the Streets is actually very fair. King of the Streets puts you in 5-star hotels. They'll pay for your food. They'll give you 500, 600 euros worth of free King of the Streets gear. They take care of you. You land, there's someone waiting in a nice car. No, no, to them, everyone's away for them unless it's one of their guys from their city. But even that, they still don't fucking show favoritism. They're a very professional, cool bunch of guys. Thailand, I went over there with a sponsor. This guy Charlie took me. So we stayed in like a 5-star luxury area of the gym. Simbi Muay Thai in Phuket. No drama there. No, King of the Streets has no home fighters. They have their fighters they like, but they won't be, you know, biased. They're not going to give a guy who's a killer somebody who's brand new, because what do they get out of watching somebody die? Mm-hmm. If anything, it'll just hurt the event. No, they're very on top of it. I have nothing negative to say. They paid me some money even after I lost, and they don't pay anyone when they lose. But I broke my leg and I kept fighting. They saw that I broke my leg. They saw the x-rays. I got up. I kept fighting until I couldn't anymore. No, King of the Streets is great. BYB is great. BKB is great. You know, BKB hasn't fucked me around either. They'll hook you up with shit and everything. So, yeah, BYB was fantastic too. They paid for all the lunch and everything for the day before weigh-ins recently down in London. Really nice hotels. You know, Joe and Jim are great guys. They're personal friends of mine. You know, I could call Joe or Jim right now and say, hey, I need 3,000 pounds. They won't ask for what. It'll be transferred over. Like, they take care of their people. Joe and Jim don't set up any fucking mismatches. BYB don't set up any mismatches. They just want good, pure fights. The King of the Street stuff is a little different in the sense that it's like you not have a pool of pros like we know a lot about. But King of the Street also, they are not interested in any hand-me-give-me fights. They give everybody who they think, they do their research on, and those guys know who's who out of hooligans. And then they say, you and you, the match it as fair as they can. It's probably why nobody's died yet. Mm-hmm. So,
did you know going into Bare Knuckle what it would explode into? Because you were one of the first really to go over
there. I was impressed. There's only one person before me, Billy Martin. He had one fight, he beat a 9 named Scott Midgley, and then he got scared of Jimmy Sweeney and he never came back. No, I didn't know what it was going to turn into. I thought it would just be some fist fights against English people for fun, for some extra money. Get to travel, because by that point I hadn't really traveled. But now you're talking, I've stayed in Germany and traded UFD gym. I go to Serbia and train with Vaso Bukocevic at Fight Company and all those guys in Serbia and Montenegro. I go to Poland. I got people I could stay with in Poland and train, fought in Poland, been to Sweden, fought in Sweden, been all over Thailand. So pretty interesting. But you know, I need to get back to Poland and actually win. Because that's one country that's like an invasion. Like, if you had a map of places I've invaded with marks that I've won and lost, Poland is 2 fucking X's on it because I lost the 2 fights I had over there. So I need to fucking invade Poland again before I retire.
You said in an interview recently that you don't want to knock people out. You want to mutilate their faces instead while you're doing bare knuckle, sorry.
Yeah, not interested in knockout and bare knuckle. First off, if I cut you up, you have to think about me forever. 2, it annoys people. Oh, it's not a real win. It's a cut. No, it's a real win. If I took a sword and I chopped you with it, you're dead. So it's a real win. 3, there's a lot better ways to knock somebody out than punching them, headbutting them, kicking them, body slamming them. The fuck do I want to punch you for so hard that I fucking hit you? And if I want to knock you out, why the fuck do I want to punch you that hard with my hands that are not in gloves? That could hurt. So, you know, rip them up. I mean, I will floor you, and I if you fall down and your face is fucking broken, you're knocked out, great. But at the same time, I'll just try to chop you up and make you look like Freddy Krueger. You have to think about me forever then. A lot of these English guys don't like me because I'm American. So now you got to think about America forever when you look at your face. So fuck you. what was it? And it also, a lot of people try to discredit cuts. They say cuts aren't real wins in bare knuckle. So I like to just be somebody that is, you know, makes people annoyed. He didn't win. He just took a chunk out of my friend's face, and my friend looked like a fucking Wolverine bit him. No, okay. Whatever you say.
The most hated man in bare knuckle boxing?
Because I talk shit. It wasn't always that way. When I first came over, you know what it was? It was the fans. It was the English people that did it. You got a lot of English guys that I'm cool with, and a lot that I'm not. And, you know, this is something, and this is, don't take this personally or offensive, but every culture I've seen in different countries has their, like, staples. Like, let's say Serbia and the Balkans. Don't take this offense, anybody over there, but I don't trust Balkan people. They come from a third world country that was always in war. And if they think they can make money off you, they'll do it. And not all of them, probably, but it's a place you don't want to flash that you have money in, even near your friends. England, it's a weird culture here. I remember I was fighting an English guy once, and all these people were coming up asking for autographs. No, good fight, mate. Great. Can't wait to see you out there. Old women, the fight gets announced. The same people who were asking and acting all nice to me, I'm walking out, are screaming, "You fucking Yank cunt." They were friends with this guy. I don't understand. Well, you just were nice to me. Well, fuck you now. And I got in and I beat him, and then I got out and they came up to me and they're trying to discredit my win. And I'm like, yo, get out of my face, motherfucker. Well, like this past week, I was fighting a Polish guy. And there's a bunch of English guys in the crowd screaming, "Knock the Yank out, fuck the Yank." I don't know who's saying it. I get out of the ring and a guy comes up to me. "Oh, great fight, mate. Great fight. Get a picture with you." Yeah, cool. He walks away. Someone's like, "Yo, he was talking all that shit, yelling when you were in the ring." Like, was he? Far be it. I didn't know that. Like that. So like over here, like, because I'm very like, when that started happening, I kind of stopped fucking. When I first came over here, I was all like, "Oh yeah, England's cool." And like people kind of run with it, like I guess think that I was being soft or something. So then I just kind of switched on to fuck you guys. You don't like me, I don't like you. If you like me, cool. If you don't, I don't care. And then like if you know, you're from England, so you would know like towns over here are very like clannish. Mm. Like Leeds is Leeds, Castleford is Castleford. Even if they know you and you're from Pontefract and they're friends with you and you're fighting a cast lad, they hate you now, even though you've been boys forever. Like that type of shit spilled over a lot on me. I'd be cool with a guy and then I'd be fighting someone from his town and I'd see he's supporting him. And I'm like, well, fuck you then. And then it would just turn into nonsense back and forth. Yeah, that was it.
Do you think that you're kind of like one of the last kind of gladiators? Because a lot of people, you'll go, you'll fight anybody, you'll be the A side, you'll be the B side. Whereas a lot of people now, they get into, you know, combat sports and they treat it more as a business and they try to pick the easiest fights for the most money and work the way up.
You have a lot of that, but you also have a lot of guys who aren't like, you know, you got Brian Hoy and then you got Adam, King of the Street. I can't even pronounce his last name. He's from Poland. Big tattooed guy with the mohawk. No, but you got a lot of guys like me. Brian Hoy from Holland is in KSW now with the King of the Streets. And then you got a lot of these super talented guys that not interested in the other aspect of it. They just want to use their athleticism to make money. And they will take hard fights. They'll get to the UFC. They will fight legitimate top opponents. Very rarely do you see the few that only want the easy fights, because sooner than later, those easy fights are going to materialize into fighting like a real name in a big organization. And they're going after that. So they might take 10 easy fights and I might think you're a bitch for doing it. But so long as you, in the end, fight that monster at the end of the fucking tunnel, at least, you know, I can't really insult you for that. I think that's actually less. I think you have less people that, unless they're just doing white collar to like beat up their local fucking fishmonger and then trying to act like they're fucking John Jones. But when you're talking about people that are actually trying to get to Bellator or the UFC or PFL or KSW, they might have 10 fights versus guys that they're totally better than. But when they get the call from PSL, PFL, or UFC, they will answer it. So you can't really say that, oh, you only fight handpicked guys, because now you're in the UFC fighting fucking somebody who's legit. So I don't think I'm last of a dying breed. I think I may be, I don't have any options though. Like I don't have KSW or PFL. I'm too old. I'm too injured. If I was 25, would I be doing King of the Streets? Probably, maybe not, because I'd be 25 or 22, and I'd be aiming for the UFC money or the Bellator money. You know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of those guys might do it, but why will they go risk a career ruining injury for pride on King of the Streets when if they just do what they do in 2 years, they'll be on UFC card, you know?
Mm. You've had over 100 fights, amateur and professional. What is your What is your greatest achievement so far?
I don't know. I'm not fighting. Probably the fact that I've done all of this on my own. Like, I've literally traveled everywhere on my own. I've done this all on my own. I fought everywhere. I don't know what you could say. Like, I mean, I've made some money doing it, but if it was about money, I wouldn't be doing this. But I don't know, achievement-wise, I don't really look at it like that. I guess that I'm a Hall of Fame bare-knuckle boxer from America. The only other one is John L. Sullivan in the 1800s. I think, you know, in 500 years, the world is still alive, and we haven't fucking blown each other into fucking smithereens yet, and that stuff is still alive. It'll say, you know, John Sullivan, Eric Olson, a list of fights and all that. And that's thanks to Jim Freeman Dove getting in touch with them guys over in America and letting them know, yo, we've got the longest fighting American bare-knuckle fighter here in England. Why isn't he in your fucking Hall of Fame? And, you know, that was all Jim Freeman Dove doing that for me from BKB Trademark. So thank you, Jim.
If you could have one fight again, you know, if you could redo it, which fight would you pick?
Probably the one that I had Sunday. Because I didn't gouge his eyes. I uploaded it. It was a knuckle. But I don't think that I would have thrown them little rabbit punches in there. I think I would have just hugged him and get the ref to break it. I was just trying to move his head to punch him. Look, I'm a dirty fighter, I admit it. And when I am, I will say I am. But I didn't fight that fight with malicious intent in the sense that I wasn't trying to gouge his eyes. Trust me, if I want to gouge your eyes, I'll gouge your eyes. You will know it. You will not come back off 5 minutes from the medic. It was a knuckle. It was like punches in here and then like pushing his head off me because he was hugging me. Wouldn't have done that. I didn't think it was going to be a problem. I thought that like a little like his eye here and me going bang into his face and it slipping in his eye and pushing his head back. And it would be like a knockdown because it's like if I punch you in the eye, you know? Mm. But I was wrong and things happened and nobody fucked me on that. The referee saw what he saw and I get it looking at it. If I had asked that question, like what digits of the knuckles are okay, I wouldn't have done it. Probably that one right now. But if you ask me that question again in a month, I'll probably say another one.
Do you think just for something like that, your reputation precedes you? Do you think that's why the referee...
Yeah, because I'm not the same person when I fight, when I go to events. You know, when I get into a fight mode and mentality, I don't want to talk to nobody. I ain't friendly. I don't want to shake your hands. And I will be dirty. I admit it. I'm not ashamed of it. It's a fight. I'm not one of them guys. I don't have a rock garden. I'm not raking my Zen rock garden, sitting under a waterfall. I'm doing fucking deadlifts and fucking shadow boxing with weights with the intent to put you through the floor. So people know what's up. Plus I'm mouth off. Like I'll tell refs and judges and shit what I think of them. Like, yo, how'd you get that fucking view? What gave you that fucking view? And then they'll tell me, I'll go fuck yourself. So, you know,
I saw in a previous interview, Eric, that you love to gamble. You're a big gambler.
I was not anymore.
Not anymore.
No, I lost too much money, won too much money. See, but that's like a drug addiction. I'm not an addict, but I'm an addict. I'm not an addict because I don't do anything that makes me addictive, but I have a very bad addictive personality. I am bad with it when I used to do it. I also used to win a lot because I don't suck at it. I mean, I'll do my research. I won a lot of money with it, but lost a lot of money too. So it's just, I don't know. I don't do drugs. I don't drink. So it's probably the only thing that can give me a rush, like sitting outside someone's house waiting for them to come home with a fucking blade or a gun, which is also exciting. It's a gamble too, because you could get arrested and sent away for 700 years. What was it? But safer if you just bet like $500 on the fucking Yankees or the Mets. Well, not if you bet on the Mets. They'll probably lose for you.
Yeah. What was your favorite thing to bet on? What sports?
Well, fighting, obviously. Pretty decent with fighting. I'd say I could call 7 out of 10 fights, but NFL.
NFL?
NBA, NFL, NBA, and I love baseball, Major League Baseball. I love those. Love them even more after you win a few hundred on them. I used to like soccer, your football. But my biggest problem with your guys' sports is this. So if I bet on a game of NFL, Raiders versus the Colts, NFL, if it goes into overtime and my team wins, the Raiders, I win. If I pick Liverpool versus Manchester and nobody scores and it goes into overtime and Liverpool scores, I fucking lose because I didn't choose overtime. And then if I, and then, so like, I've lost so much fucking money on soccer where the team I picked to win won, but in overtime. And I'm sitting here like, what the fuck is that? It's the goddamn game. I thought, oh, you got to pick the, you guys are so precise over here. Like, there was a point when I didn't get to do it, but they had bets going on at like Betfred about snow, how much it was going to snow in a certain part of the country. And I'm the type that would bet on that. What was it? So, yeah, that's exciting. But I can't do that now. I lose too much fucking money. You win money, but then you lose it. So do you really win it? If you know, you win $5,000 and then you lose $8,000 and then you win 10 and then you lose. Are you really ever up? Probably not.
What's your biggest ever win?
$15,000 on NFL.
On the NFL?
Yeah, $15,000. What was it? And then I lost $80,000, but I didn't pay it. See, in America, in America, it's all illegal. Well, yeah. It was illegal. It was bookies. So you would give me a credit limit of 10,000 if you're stupid. And then I would bet throughout the week. And at the end of the week, whatever I owe, I pay you. Whatever you owe me, you pay me. But it's illegal. So it really goes on people's gambling addictions, because I could just call the FBI if I was a rat and you'd be in some trouble for racketeering and loan sharking. But no one's going to do that because they're not going to be able to gamble then. But then I lost a lot of money over a month betting in Thailand, the fucking NBA. And I just told them when I got back, I'm not paying you anything. I don't know you. You're a bookie. Fuck you. Come and take it. And people, everybody in New York thinks there's Tony Soprano. What the fuck are you going to do? What are you going to send somebody to me to get it? I dare you, because I'll come to you with their fucking head after. Try me, motherfucker. And that was that. And then a few more bookies that I paid and some I didn't pay. Is what it is.
I saw in the Daily Star interview that we touched on earlier, you said you expected to be dead by 25.
Yeah, I thought something would happen. I thought that I would probably kill myself because I'd be looking at like multiple life sentences. They may have connected the dots on a few things and put me away, but they haven't. So no need to. Or I would have had a really bad day, just been in a bad mood and pulled out like a fucking gun and started shooting at somebody in traffic. And then I've already shot two people there. Why not just drive to your house and your house and your house and kill all of you motherfuckers? And at that point, it's over. So we're going to be fucking, you think I'm going to go to prison for fucking 9 life sentences? Fuck you. I'm going to shoot at the pigs and the pigs are going to shoot back and either they're going to kill me or I'm going to shoot myself. So that was always my mindset. My mindset was always just fuck you. I could just kill myself to get out of it. What are you going to give me, life? Ship my casket to the prison, motherfucker. You know, so that was always my mindset. I never really thought a person was going to kill me. It was always me who was going to kill me, or the scenario was going to lead to my death. You know, I can't imagine doing life in prison. Too boring. Where'd you get the toothache? Those dentists suck in there. I'm not dealing with that shit. I'm not going to live to be 60 with no fucking teeth, black teeth, because I fucking killed someone when I'm 20. Fuck you. I'd rather get it over with. So that's mainly what I was thinking. And with the amount of criminal activity I was involved in, burglaries, robberies, fucking everything. The sooner than later, you'd imagine something because I was lucky. It didn't. It did not. There's other things too that weren't even money related that could have went wrong that didn't. And that's luck. Very big luck. But if it hadn't been, we wouldn't be having this conversation. We'd be fucking sitting in Attica. Or I'd be dead because I wouldn't be sitting in Attica.
Do you think you've mellowed with age, Eric?
No. I've just become more. If you do something to me that I deem really bad, I'll just get you. You won't know it. I won't stomp you out in the street or fucking put hands on you. But at the same time, you know, I will. Like, if I'm out with my girl and my family and somebody looks at her wrong or me wrong, I'm ready to murder you and die over it. So it's not the smartest mentality. Yelled at somebody in the fucking parking lot of McDonald's the other day with my kid and my, well, my kids and my girlfriend there, and I was fully ready to fucking kill them. And if they had started fighting with me, I could have died. So it's still a stupid 19-year-old jail mentality. And not proud of it. It's dumb. And when I cool off, I thank God that was stupid. But no, what I mean about mellowed out is I just won't do something maybe, but I'll stalk your Instagram for 3 years. I'll find where you work. I'll find where you live 5 years later over something you did that you don't even remember. And I'll be sitting in your fucking bushes waiting for you to come out if it's that serious in my head. And then that's all they wrote. They'll read about you on the front fucking page. Leave them for the motherfucking ambulance to get them. They ain't going to connect the dots. I know they won't. We don't have CCTV all over the place in America like they do here.
Mm. Yeah, it's everywhere in the UK.
I try to isolate myself. I hang around my girl and my kids and my dogs and my coach and people who in no way, shape, or form trigger me. And that's it. I don't go out. I'm not a drinker. So what's the point of going to pubs? All my friends are either dead or back in New York, in America. There's some here, but I don't see them like that. I'm 40 now. I'm not 20 where you meet up with someone on a fucking Friday and you're out till Sunday with them. So it's a different life now.
What's next for Erik Olsen?
Fucking diet, hopefully. Because I don't like the way I looked in my last fucking fight. I really need to get back to 90 kilograms. I'd like a good stretch of a few fights left at about 90, 95 kilograms. This 105, 110 kilograms is just fucking not a good look. I don't punch hard enough to be fighting fucking giants. And then I don't want to also beat people up and be that fat motherfucker who knocked everyone out who hits hard. So really need to fucking get my training's on point. I just need to get my goddamn diet fucking point. I've been dieting since 2019. It's not fucking getting any better.
If you could pick your perfect retirement fight, which company, which promotion, what would it be?
Honestly, that's a hard one. Me with my pride and my ego, I'd probably say Vittori because I got killed there twice in Poland. And I'd probably pick a tournament so I could avenge my two losses by beating three people in one night in the country that fucking destroyed me twice. But I don't know. That's me being, I mean, but who the fuck wouldn't say like the UFC or something for fucking crazy Conor McGregor money. But all that sticks out in my head is Erik went to Poland and got defeated twice, like a Viking army that has the X's in that fucking area because he lost.
One person I'd love to see you fight because I think the build-up would be amazing, Mike Perry in bare knuckle.
Oh, yeah. He's a lot smaller than me, though. I'm actually a Perry fan. I like Perry.
Yeah.
So I don't know how good the build-up would be for that because I like him. I personally think I could outbox him, too. I think I could box his fucking head off, but he'd be in my face. He's just smaller. But I'm a Perry fan. I love his shit. I like when he fought with Lane. I like the way he talks. I like the way he acts. I like Mike Perry. But yeah, I could see that being exciting.
Who are your favorite fighters, Erik?
Gokhan Saki is a favorite fighter. You know, boxing, like, you know, Joe Frazier, Sonny Liston, guys like that, fucking Lennox Lewis. But my favorite boxer of all times is James Toney. Favorite kickboxer is Gokhan Saki. MMA guys, you know, it's hard to say because you got so many weight classes. I like wrestlers, Daniel Cormier. I can't even know if I'm pronouncing his name right. Diaz guys are cool. It depends. Yeah, but those first few I said, like James Toney is my favorite boxer, and Gokhan Saki, my favorite kickboxer.
Yeah. So that's where you get your elusiveness from, James Toney.
Well, I'm not, maybe 1% of it. In glove boxing, if I want to more, but I have my moments in bare knuckle where I'll roll and slip and back. Yeah. And that's from a lot of watching his stuff. But I also was from a very good boxing gym in Long Island under Andy Filardo, who's ex Golden Gloves and all that. So he taught me the fundamentals and I'll still use a lot of rolls and stuff. But a lot of that came through watching Tony's footage and like trying it and sparring 900 times. And then you just start to flow with it. And then you can land. I did it a bunch in this fight here. In this past fight, I'll send you the link to it.
I watched it on the Watch Stadium link.
Yeah. it may have looked like he was landing, but if you actually go back and watch it, like Paul Malignaggi says, on the ropes, I'm absorbing in my shoulders and I'm moving and slipping quite a bit. If he's throwing eight, he's landing two. The rest are just hitting, pitter-pattering off places. I had him hurt. The plan was to drag him into round four and five and finish him. He was too tired, too muscle-bound. He's not a bad fighter. Simon and me are cool now. We weren't then, but we are now. I'm not insulting him. I just feel that he was gassing out and my shots were hitting him. There was a few times I saw him stumble. He never really hurt me. I just was fucking countering him, trying to drain him and lean on him and everything. But yeah, Tony's my favorite.
Any fight scheduled at any month that you decide that you'll be back after getting, you know, recovering from the injuries?
Oh, I'm fighting in December. I'm king of the streets.
It's already arranged?
Yeah, I'm fighting some neo-Nazi gang leader from France who hates me because I fucked this Polish friend up. He's 178 centimeters and 80 kilograms, and I've got to be 99 kilograms, and I'm 184 centimeters. And I'm going to fuck him up. His name's Tomas. I don't like him. He's covered in all this swastika bullshit and neo-Nazi stuff, and he stomped some homeless men in France and went to jail for it. And he don't like me because I beat some Polish guy up and gouged his eyes. So we've been talking shit back and forth on Telegram and Instagram. So King of Streets is like, set it up. I'm like, all right, fine with me. He's going to be in a very bad scenario soon. He's so extreme neo-Nazi. He's one of them guys that can't train anywhere because of it. He has to train with his white brothers because he can't go to a Brazilian jiu-jitsu gym when he's covered in swastikas and SS tattoos to train with black guys and shit like that. So his wrestling and boxing is garbage because he's not athletic as much as he thinks he is. And second off, he doesn't have anyone he can train with. You can only train in one pool so long before you need to go to the next one. Fuck him. I'm going to fuck him up. I'm going to bite something off of him.
One question, Eric, that I always like to finish on. Somebody that's listening to this and wants to follow in your footsteps, you know, and get into, you know, professional combat sports, what advice would you give them?
What advice would I give somebody who wants to do it? Train a lot, a lot, a lot, a lot, a lot of wrestling if you're going to do anything besides boxing. And, you know, get a good trainer and stay with them and... Yeah, stick to what you want to do, but like understand, like you want to have your fundamentals have to be solid, because when everything else leaps and you're tired and the person's tired or you're mad, everything comes down to fundamentals, your jabs, your singles, your doubles, your uppercuts, your hooks, your fundamentals. That would be it. And that's really all it is to it, because it's just essence to repetition. It's your body doing movements repetitively until it does its second nature. So that would be that. Yeah. No big deep words of wisdom there, and expect to get a lot of injuries. I feel like I've been in a car crash and I'm 40. I feel like I'm 90. Can't even tie my shoes sometimes in the morning until I stretch.
Well, Eric, I appreciate your time today. If you want to give everybody your socials, you know, wherever, tell them where your next fight's going to be, where they can find it.
Next fight's going to be on King of the Streets. Good look on Instagram for that. My Instagram is Eric_S_Olsen on Instagram. Facebook is always getting deleted. It's Eric S. Olsen, Olsen. But Facebook, it's whatever. Probably not even me. Probably some idiot that made it talking shit. Instagram is the other one. So that's what I'm on for all my fight stuff is on there. That's how you messaged me and I met you. That would be the best bet to get in touch with me, and I'll answer everything. So if you message me talking shit, I'm going to tell you to go fuck yourself. If you don't, I'll be cool. I'll talk about where people sometimes message you. It's weird sometimes, like, oh, I can't believe I'm talking to you. Why? Who the fuck am I? Some psychopath from Levittown? Okay. It's some of it's strange, and I'm not even a big name. I don't consider myself to be some celebrity. Not like half as like Mike Perry or something. Like, imagine what those fucking guys get. Crazy. I don't even think you'd be able to go out to eat without people fucking like trying to get autographs from you. I feel awkward when people do that. I'm nice to everybody. I'll always talk to anybody, but I feel awkward. I'm not used to positive reinforcement. I'm used to negative, like, fuck you, Olsen, you fucking motherfucker. I'm not used to people like, oh, I saw your fight. I loved it. Can I get your autograph? Well, what the fuck you want that for? But all right.
Yeah. Well, thanks again, Eric. And you can find us at at TLRMMA on Instagram and Twitter. Catch us next time. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Last Round MMA Podcast. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes and interviews. In the meantime, follow The Last Round MMA on Twitter and Instagram at TLRMMA.